If you weren't born with a trust fund, but feel like you should have one, you are in the right place. Welcome to Old Money, a podcast dedicated to breaking down the new rules to living well and getting wealthy. I want you to build a life and a legacy that feels rich in every sense of the word. And while I don't have any insider trading secrets, I do have some secrets about how getting rich is actually an inside job. I'm your host, Amber Evenson. Now, let's get into it. Well, hello, rich girls. Welcome to Old Money Podcast. It's me. Do you remember me? Your host, Amber Frankusen Evenson. No, Amber Evenson. I haven't done this in a while. I'm a little rusty. Hi, girls. I've missed you. Happy summer. It is nearly August 1st, and I owed you an update. Last time we talked was May 5th. So almost 3 months ago when I let you know that I was, you know, leaning into the luxury of leaving and walking out of my weekly routine for Old Money to try something new. And I'm back with not just an update, but some new formatting, some new information, some new fresh energy. How are you? I am, if you hear some things in the background, like some crashing waves or a seagull or maybe like a Budweiser truck, I'm not sure, but my door is open. I'm sitting on my bed at Le Berge Hotel in Del Mar. I'm in San Diego for work this week, and it's a beautiful, sort of cloudy day, just about 6:30 in the afternoon, and I've just wrapped work, and I'm just feeling inspired to chat with you. I've been saving all my notes, things I've wanted to talk about, things I've wanted to tell you, and I'm excited to dive in. So, of course, today I have a life update for you, but I also have some really good wealth and culture stories. We're going to go through some recent news that is going to give you some hot gossip to drop at the mahjong table when you're with your girlies playing a game. By the way, everybody is playing mahjong. I need some friends to play mahjong with in San Francisco. I want to learn. I have found one, and we need a crew of two more. So if you're in San Francisco and want to learn how to play mahjong, hit me up, because everybody's doing it, and I think the tiles are very cute, so I'm down to learn. But anyway, this episode, I've got some fun stories for you about what the wealthy are up to. You've got to stick around for some epic shout-outs at the end and just some general updates on not just what I've been doing this summer, but what I've been reading, watching, buying, putting on my body, all the things that I think you might find interesting as well. So I guess we should just pick right back up where we left off, which is last time we talked, I was telling you that we moved. We moved from San Diego to San Francisco, and it has just been everything of the sort, life-changing in the best way possible. I think Justin and I were both ready for a new chapter in our lives. I lived in San Diego for the better half of 20 years. And San Francisco holds a very special place in my heart. Growing up in a suburb of the city and always driving there to escape was not just about escaping the suburbs. It was about finding myself and going to concerts and shopping and being anonymous in the city and being around the energy. But before we were moving, I was having a lot of honest kind of trepidation about going into a super urban environment. We were living in a really urban environment in San Diego, and it was just grating on my nervous system, just having to go in an elevator every time we had to take the dog out to go to the bathroom, having all the traffic, dodging cars all the time, all of the road noise, the construction, which was happening right across the street from our house, which was literally killing me slowly. We even had, it was a very modern apartment. It was so beautiful, but like concrete floors, big glass windows, not a lot of protection, no window curtains, no softness. So it was never really feeling settled and safe and comfortable at home. Our home in San Diego was so utilitarian. It was great for what it was, but I was just feeling on edge. And moving to San Francisco, what I was imagining in my head was that it was going to be so much more of that. And we lucked out so much. We are in an amazing neighborhood. We can see the city, but we are not in San Francisco craziness. I mean, we're still in San Francisco, But we live in a residential neighborhood up on a hill. There's not a lot of drive-by traffic. We have a dead end on one end of our street. We have a lot of sun. I was also really worried about the weather and feeling depressed. We have great weather up there. We're 10 minutes to get to anywhere you would want to go out to eat or shop or be. 20 minutes to get to the other side of the city that we love to be in. I mean, it's just everything I could have hoped for. We have a single family home with a yard in the back. Poppy has her own private park with a tree, and she loves to lounge in the backyard. It's literally everything I ever would have hoped for. And we did do a manifesting list for this house. And when I say we, I meant me, but I did it on behalf of Justin and myself. And when I tell you, it hit every single box. Like, we ticked every box, from wanting a house with a little bit of character, having great weather, lots of natural light, old hardwood floors, high ceilings, a yard, a garden. I just planted herbs, you guys. I'm so nervous that they're not going to grow. I'm planting them from seeds, and it's not really a great time to plant herbs, I know, but I am desperate to like garden and do the things. I am Martha Stewart with my chow and my garden, and I'm loving cooking in our house and being home. It has honestly been so amazing. So the home base situation and the fact that I can hear birds chirping and I have, you know, like a freaking hummingbird feeder right now. I am so domesticated. You could basically call me a trad wife. I am so calm. I'm so happy. And the good news is we love our house. The bad news is I have had to travel against my will for almost 75% of the weeks that we've lived there so far. So everybody's been sending me their recommendations for their favorite restaurants, which I love, by the way. Just don't send me any Anthony Bourdain stuff, because like, too depressing and too serious. I'm not a foodie. I'm like a vibes person. You know this. Get me a glass of Sancerre and a cute place to take a picture. I'm golden. But I haven't had a lot of chances to go out in the city and do a lot. So Justin and I have had a few really fun days, weekends, et cetera. We've been really good about doing our Thursday night date night whenever I am in town. But I've been traveling so, so much, and I'm being dramatic and ridiculous when I say against my will. I mean, I'm happy to be able to travel and do the things, but we've had a lot of different trips pop up, like conferences, family travel. I'm traveling for work a lot, just up and backs. And that's why I'm in San Diego right now. I'm here for clients and to see my team. And I'm so grateful and so happy to do it. Like, I'm so happy to be here, and it's giving me time and space to sit on this beautiful, clean bed in this beautiful room, looking at the ocean, recording this podcast. But honestly, if my dog's not there, I don't want to go. I just want to be home with Poppy. I'm such a homebody. I'm feeling so called to the house, and I just want to be there all the time, especially because we're furnishing it. We're putting it together, not by ourselves, by the way. We hired an amazing decorator. Shout out Sierra, who has been such an incredible help to us, because I mean, that what we're paying her is saving Justin and I in fighting over who gets to pick what. So, I mean, it's everything. Just generally speaking, my nervous system is finally actually relaxed. And then on top of that, I've been doing a lot of very low dopamine things. And we traveled recently to Oregon and to Utah, and it's just been easy. Like, things have been very calm. And Justin has even said, you know, with everything that we have going on with the agency, how calm I've been. And that has been my new strength, my new superpower, honestly. I think the house has a lot to do with it. The environment that you're in is so important. And the other thing is that I'm just getting better at taking care of myself in a very meaningful way, which has never been more important, because what's also been going on is that the agency is amazing. It's exploding. We have brought on so many new clients. We are in such high demand. We have amazing, like, I don't want to say record setting. It's not a record setting. It's like the types of projects that are career defining, like have so much visibility and are so high. I mean, they're high stakes, but they're just so meaningful to me. And that means hiring more people, bringing on more talent, training more people, spending time not just getting the work done, but setting everybody else up for success. And it's required a different version of me. It's really required me to be the CEO that trains leaders, not the person that does it all. And that is releasing control. And that's a little uncomfortable for me, if we're being honest. So there's a lot of growth happening over here, guys. And part of that growth and the just time to reflect has happened. The growth has happened in the business. My self-regulation and self-care is better. My connection with Justin is stronger. The exploring that we want to do in the city, all of that is created through the time I make for it. And I made the time for it by taking something off of my plate. And the thing I took off my plate is something that I love. It's this, it's old money. But whoever says doing a podcast is easy, ain't doing a good podcast, because it's a lot of work. I would spend every single day worried about the next podcast. Is it overdue? Is it, I need to record it. Is it going to get be on time? What am I going to talk about? How can I make it interesting, funny, entertaining, valuable, make a big impact? What am I talking about? Do I need to do research? Like, so much went into it on the invisible labor and the mental load of constantly being attuned to the podcast. I was not ever in a place where I was going to sit and batch five episodes at a time, because it just didn't feel authentic to me. And not only that, but I was working with some new people who are absolutely phenomenal, but their editing schedule wasn't vibing with my editing schedule. Like, I can't get something done 2 weeks in advance. I'm doing it when I have time, honestly. And usually it's a couple days before it needs to go live. And this one, for example, I'm going to record this tonight and I'm probably going to post it tomorrow. I'm just going to edit it quickly, get it together for you and get it into the world, because done is better than perfect. So between all of this type of decision making that I went through last time that we talked, I really wanted to come back and tell you again how good I feel about it. It doesn't mean anything about the success of the show. It doesn't mean anything about my ability to create, whether I'm good or bad, or if I failed or succeeded. I mean, I succeeded on all fronts in my eyes, even though the podcast isn't coming out every single week. I'm just about to hit 3 years of old money, you guys. August 1st is the 3-year anniversary of this show existing in the world. And I am so proud of what we've created here together. But looking back and also being introspective about what I really like about podcasts is a little bit more levity and fun and less heavy lecturing. I don't need to listen on a way to improve my life every single week. Like, my life is really good, but I do need something to keep my mind occupied or make me think about different things or make me laugh, entertain me, etc. And I started to reflect on what I was liking to consume as a podcast listener. And I was not consuming content like old money anymore. I hadn't been listening to anything like this in a very long time. So if I don't want to listen to it, why am I creating it? So it inspired me to look again at what I was enjoying listening to, consuming, and what I want to create. And I think, you know, going back to what I want to create is something more fun, more levity, more pop culture, more silliness, more enjoyment, and something that's just ear candy and like a little snack, not anything too heavy. So what you can expect from Old Money moving forward sporadically, because I ain't coming back week to week just quite yet, but it's going to be hopefully a little bit more of that. And hopefully this episode gives you a little taste. So that's where we're at with Old Money. But I don't even know why I got on that topic, because I wasn't even done talking about San Francisco yet, because San Francisco is crazy, you guys. Like, talking about it, zooming out from a cultural standpoint, I have so much to tell you. First of all, if you are feeling stagnant in your city, I have a trick for you. It's called gamification, and that is what Justin and I are doing. We are trying to gamify absolutely everything that we can about experiencing the city, because we're having so much fun. Like, let me tell you a couple things we're doing. Number one, there's all these cute little neighborhoods all over the city. There's the Marina and Cal Hollow and Pack Heights and Coal Valley, Hayes Valley, Sunset and Richmond and Inner Richmond and Outer Richmond. And our goal is that we're going to get a coffee and a cocktail in every single neighborhood, and we're crossing it off a map. So that's huge for one. The second thing is that in part of my home styling in our new living room, which is just so cute and cozy, I've got a bowl and I'm collecting matchbooks. So we're going to go to every restaurant in San Francisco that has matchbooks so that I can collect them and put them in that bowl. My grandpa used to do that, and I used to look at them when I was a little kid, and I'm just so enamored by it. It's so cute. And then of course I use them to light our candles. I'm also on the hunt for the best cappuccino. I was highly referred to Sightglass in the Mission, and I'm going to tell you, it was fine. It wasn't life-changing, but I can always go again. But if you have a recommendation for the best cappuccino in San Francisco, I am on the hunt. I need to know. So you just let me know where to go. But generally speaking, what's going on in the city, number one, is that everything is expensive as hell. If you've been reading the news, there is an AI boom going on and housing prices are insane. Just today, it was released that the average price of a two-bedroom apartment in San Francisco is $6,000, which is an all-time high. However, it doesn't even hold a candle to New York, which has been at $8,000 for a two-bedroom for many years in a row. So San Francisco is still like a baby city compared to New York. However, the difference is there's so much supply constraint in San Francisco. San Francisco is a very small city, 7 by 7 miles, I think, on each side. Don't quote me on that. But New York, they're constantly building, developing. There's always more housing coming onto the market, even though it is one of the most populated cities in the world. There's housing supply. San Francisco is very housing constrained. But what's so interesting is that it literally is such a freaking bubble because I am experiencing life in the future. First of all, if you have not seen a Waymo in real life yet because they're not in your city, just wait till you see a car driving on its own. It is the craziest fucking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And then just wait till you get in one. I was being such a boomer, literally filming the car driving itself, the wheel spinning on its own when Justin and I are in the back seat. It's the trippiest thing I have ever experienced. And I'm going to tell you something, the Waymos drive better than real people, you guys. They are so smooth. They're so like human. They kind of creep up a little bit at the stop sign. They're reactive. They'll drive around something that's in the way. They just drive very naturally, not like a robot at all. It is so crazy. Then there's also the Zoox. I have no idea how to say it. It's a taxi cab, XOOX or ZOOX or something like that. And it's this crazy little futuristic car that drives around and is a taxi cab that you can jump in and out of. And it's just driverless. It's crazy. If you guys remember the movie Back to the Future 2, when he goes into the future and he gets out of the car, the time machine, and those dogs are being walked on their own, that is coming, you guys. It is so crazy. And the AI boom is so real. Justin and I went to this dinner, Via Aurelia, I think is what it was called. It's down in Dogpatch. On the way there, we passed the Cisco offices and the OpenAI offices and all these other big offices. And we get down to dinner and it's right next to AT&T Park, which is not called that anymore. It's called something else, but wherever the Giants play. And we sit down and we're like sitting in this little cozy booth. And this guy, there's a table of 8 people that are sitting right across from us. And I'm telling you, they looked like a stock photo. You had women, you had men, you had old, you had young, you had all races, all different ethnicities and backgrounds, all wearing black QZs, quarter zips, little zip ups, right? And the guy's making a joke to the table and he's like, and then I said, learn how to read a P&L. The whole table cracks up. Justin and I look at each other. We're like, oh shit, where are we? And people are actually talking about that stuff, like going to coffee and overhearing people say, oh, yeah, I heard he had options in OpenAI, or, oh, my gosh, this person is an early pre-IPO employee, or, hey, I've got this raise that I'm funding right now. It's the way people are actually talking, and it is so exciting. If you grew up in Northern California like I did, all these different regions of the country have their own American history, right? We do a lot of California history in elementary school. And the only thing I remember from California history was the Gold Rush and the Donner Party and the Oregon Trail. We even went gold panning at Coloma. It was just the only thing that we did in history class as kids. I know if you grew up in Southern California, you did your mission project, right? You built a mission out of clay or whatever. We talked about the Gold Rush, and the Gold Rush was announced in San Francisco. There's a specific square where the first person that found gold made the announcement. I don't know if it was the actual person that found the gold, but when gold was announced, they made the announcement that there was a gold rush happening in San Francisco, and it was the epicenter of all of the activity. That is what is happening with AI, you guys. It is I don't want to say it's not a bubble. It's not fleeting. It is changing the way that everybody works. It's changing the way that I work. It's changing the way that my mom is using it now after resisting a little bit. She told me she did amazing research on it the other day. I was so proud of her. It's going to be the new way of the future. Is it overvalued? I don't know. I'm not a money person. What am I saying? I'm not like a stock evaluator. I'm not going to speak to that. But it's here to stay. And the gold rush is happening right now. And if you remember, what I learned in history class in the fourth grade was that a lot of people came out to California to try and go pan for gold. And a lot of them did not make a lot of money. But the people who made a lot of money were the people who sold the supplies. They sold picks. They sold shovels. They sold food. They sold housing. They built the housing. They built the blue jeans. I mean, the mayor of San Francisco right now, Daniel Lurie, who I am a huge fan of, by the way, he is an heir to the Levi Strauss fortune, I think through his mom's marriage, not by blood. I could be wrong on that. But he is a public servant who is also a massive millionaire, billionaire, I'm not sure, or has the money coming. The wealth is way less conspicuous in San Francisco. There is not a Rodeo Drive. In fact, there's not even a mall in the city. There's literally nowhere to shop. It's crazy. The biggest thing that's happened in the Bay Area in the last 3 months is that Chanel opened in Palo Alto. It's crazy. Like, there's no fashion. I can hardly even find a place to get my hair done, which is funny because I'm in San Diego and tomorrow I'm getting my nails done and I'm getting a lash lift. And I just got pricked with needles to get Botox because I don't know where to go in the city. Yes, I could drive out to the East Bay or go down to Silicon Valley, but I don't want to. I don't like to drive and be in traffic all day. But outside of my minor inconvenience, the comparison on values is so stark from San Francisco to San Diego or LA. I feel like in Southern California, there's more like regression to the mean as it relates to appearances. And what I mean by that is that everyone looks the same. Like, I got off the plane this week in San Diego and I knew I was in San Diego again when I was seeing San Diego people. And I'm here in San Diego, I'm in Del Mar, and I'm like walking around Whole Foods today. I see people who look like San Diego people. It is so different than the way people look in San Francisco. There's also different pockets in the city where, yes, you have like very nice homes, Pack Heights, Presidio Terrace, but you don't have the same type of wealth culture like you do in San Diego that's conspicuous with the big cars and the big watches at the grocery store and the way people are dressing. It is so different. I find San Francisco to be a lot more individualistic. There's less emphasis on certain lifestyle pieces than there are in San Diego or Los Angeles or Orange County. And it's just really interesting to observe. And that's all I'm doing, is just observing without judgment of the things that I'm noticing there and the things that I've observed here. And neither is right or wrong. They're just very, very different. I am, however, having a lot of fun getting dressed in San Francisco. Not that I'm doing it so often, and not that I even have my wardrobe put together, but I feel like there's more opportunity to get dressed in a meaningful way. Whereas I always feel the way to dress in San Diego is resort wear. 100%. And the way to dress in San Diego is jeans and athleisure. But I see less of that in San Francisco. Nobody really goes and spends time in Union Square, but I did. I took myself out to lunch at Neiman Marcus in the Rotunda. It's this beautiful department store, and on the top floor, they have this beautiful glass, stained glass dome. That's this beautiful piece of art of Poseidon and a ship in the sea, and it's gold leafed and blue and yellow glass, and it's just absolutely stunning. I'm obsessed with it. There's a picture of it on my Instagram highlights if you want to see what I'm talking about. But within this dome, there's the restaurant is open in the middle to the first floor. So when you're on the first floor, you walk in, you can look up and you see the beautiful stained glass. But on the top floor, this restaurant wraps around And it's just the best lighting. I really just like it because of the lighting and also the popovers. They give you a popover for your bread course and with like strawberry butter, I think. And it's so good. Anyway, I took myself out to lunch there to celebrate a big win and had a glass of champagne and, you know, a girl lunch, which is for me, fries and Caesar salad with salmon dressing on the side and a glass of champagne and the popover. Perfect lunch. And I was just like happy to get dressed up to walk around and carry my nice purse and have something cute to wear and pop into Chanel and look in Neiman Marcus and do what I was going to do and enjoy myself and be a lady who lunches. And maybe one day I'll be a lady who mahjongs. It's, you know, time will tell. But I've just been having a nice time being in a new environment and a new culture that gives me the opportunity to dress and gives me the opportunity to explore. We've done so many fun things. We went recently to this art gallery called Lost Art Salon. It's not even a gallery. It's where you can buy art. And these curators have found all of these amazing artists from the 20th century, the mid-1900s, and brought their collections back to life. And there's just hundreds, thousands of prints and canvases and paintings of all different styles and sizes and shapes. And it's just an incredible collection up on the third floor of some Sherwin-Williams building in the Mission District. And Justin and I went there to like flip through art, and we ended up finding some incredible pieces by this mid-century artist who was also, he was an illustrator for advertising. He was an advertising executive. So he used to draw the ads for like DuPont and Levi's and Metamucil or whatever it was. Just the coolest thing. That does not exist in San Diego. That is so rare. Anything that you want to do in San Francisco, you can go find. We're going to do a wine education class starting in the fall. I'm making Justin do a water tasting class because if you know anything about me, I'm the pickiest water drinker. And I'm so excited about this class. This guy has you taste all these different waters. And then he tells you why they taste different. And if you can't taste the difference in water, we have nothing in common because I'm so picky. If you've ever been to Spain and somebody's given you Vichy Catalan, if you know, you know. Like, it's the saltiest. It's drinking the ocean. It's so nasty. And I'm just interested in water. So we're going to a water tasting class. Or Justin and one of his friends went to like a cologne place. I don't even know. I'm like, are you shopping for cologne? It's like a specialized cologne store. Whatever you need, the city has it. And that's what's really exciting about being close to it, is that we get to take advantage of it. And it's on us to do so. So we've been driving around in Waymos. I've been traveling every week, basically. But when we're there, we're traveling around in Waymos, doing whatever. I'm gardening. I'm organizing. I'm making quiche. I'm having a great time. So what I wanted to do before I jump into some of these news stories is I wanted to tell you a couple of the things that I've been loving, reading, doing, because I know you guys are always asking me what I'm reading, what I'm watching, what I think about it. And I want to start with what I'm loving because it's so relevant to living in San Francisco. We definitely do not have a lot of space. We have one bathroom upstairs, or one bathroom in our main living area, I should say. We have a downstairs with a garage, and that's where my office is downstairs. And in our laundry room, there is randomly a toilet next to the washer and dryer. Make it make sense. Do I use it? Yes, I use it all the time. And there's a full window where I can open the window and look into the garden as I pee. And anybody in the garden would be able to see me fully on the toilet. The design is questionable, but it is very handy to have it down there. Anyway, my point was not that. My point was, in our bathroom, we have a pedestal sink and one cupboard for all of our stuff. And Justin would call me a hoarder. I would disagree with that heavily. I am a curator. I am a curiosity explorer. I am interested, and I'm also always on the hunt for a way to make myself feel and look great. So I have a lot of products. So I've talked about Project Pan before, but we are on Project Pan overdrive. I'm not allowing myself to buy literally anything until I use every last drop of every other thing that I have that's half used. So right now I have like four bottles of Kérastase shampoo from 3 years ago in my in my, not my closet, in my shower that I'm trying to run through and use up before I go buy more. I've been working through all of my makeup. I am not allowing myself to buy any more makeup until I use everything I have. And quite frankly, I hate everything that I have right now. That's not true at all. I'm just wearing more makeup and I'm having more fun because I'm getting more dressed up and I want to buy more things. So I'm tired of what I have. What I have is very good. I've been using that Chanel water foundation, which is really great, really light, but I really want a skin tint, but I'm not allowed to get to skin tint yet. You know what I mean? I've also been using the Makeup by Mario foundation, which is pretty watery and liquidy, but gives really good coverage. It doesn't feel heavy at all and it's not transferring to any of my clothes. So I'm a huge fan of that. And then I also tried House Labs for heavier foundation for when I have to be on camera, and I do not like that. It feels like I'm wearing plaster of Paris on my face. So the makeup situation, I'm just trying to run through stuff and get rid of it so that I can try to get rid of it and buy new stuff, right? And the only thing that I have purchased recently is body care, because I have been noticing and fearful of some creepiness in my skin. And I did a ton of research about what should I do, what should I be using, etc. I had tried the Jergens Retinol Renew something or other. I had tried the Gold Bond Aging Lotion and it made me feel very, very sticky. I didn't like it. Then I also have an aversion to putting on lotion after the shower. A lot of people say this. I've heard on TikTok that it's because it's an in-between activity. It's not something that you do to end the shower. It's not the thing you do to start something new. It's just something you have to do in the middle, and it's annoying to wait, and I'm so impatient. So that tracks for me. But what I bought, and I want to tell you about because it has changed my skin, is the Osea products. This is not sponsored. I will put it in a link for you guys on my ShopMy if you want to purchase through me. That's cool. If you want to just go to osea.com, it's OSEA. I'm obsessed. Again, this isn't sponsored. But I got three things. I got the oil, I got the body lotion, like the aging body lotion, and then I got the retinol lotion. And I was in the gym the other day. Oh, that's the next thing I should tell you about, the gym. I was in the gym the other day and I was doing a stretch where my arm was in the air. And when I tell you, my skin was glistening. I haven't seen skin like that on my body ever. I was like, wow, my arm is literally glowing from within. I am obsessed with these products. They smell really nice, really clean, really fresh. And I know there's been a lot of talk about them because they are a company that does sponsor a lot of influencers. I'm telling you right now, if you didn't trust it before, trust it. It's worth the investment. It's the best thing I've bought all year long. My skin stack for my face is simpler than ever. I'm still using the same stuff I was telling you guys about last year and the year before that. My face wash is Elemis Superfood, which I'm still using. I also use the exfoliating one once or twice a week. And then I've been using Tretinoin. Tretinoin is the only thing that I'm using right now. I was previously using the, what is that called? Caudalie. I'm doing this all like from the top of my head. I'm not looking at products or a list or notes or anything. I'm just thinking. Was that Caudalie Vino Perfect instead of a vitamin C in the morning, which I also love. Makes my skin so lovely. And then for moisturizer, the Rode Glazing Milk, and still using the same La Roche-Posay. All of this is in my ShopMy if you want to see what I'm doing. But I've been having simple skin stack. I've been wearing more makeup, so I've been experimenting more with makeup, and I've been loving the Osea products, but I'm not letting myself buy anything else. But I have been buying clothes, and some of the clothes I've been buying are for the gym because I have been reinvigorated because I have found the most genius app of all times. Hear me out. I know there are so many fitness apps and they're so annoying. I've been working out with a trainer. Shout out Anna. I worked out with her twice a week, every week for a year and a half. And I loved working out with Anna. She's just the best. If you are in San Diego and you're looking for a personal trainer, shout out Anna. She's your girl. I will connect you. She is amazing. She is so wonderful. She got me in great shape both for my wedding and then afterwards, just keeping me in fighting shape because you don't want to get ready. You want to stay ready, right? And then prior to that, I was working out with an amazing trainer named Noah. And really for me, it was accountability. Like I wasn't going to skip the gym if I had to meet Anna or Noah at the gym. But also because I work out mostly in the afternoon, And at the end of the day, my brain is literally toast. Like a burnt piece of toast that's been in the toaster for 25 minutes. That's how my brain feels. I cannot program anything. I don't know how much weight I should be lifting. I don't remember. I don't know how many reps. I can't even count. Okay. So I have some challenges working against me. I'm definitely the person to just skip out on the gym and not go. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do when I get there. But I love weight training. And I knew that I wanted to get back into it in a meaningful way to really continue my muscle and muscle growth and strength. I'm trying to build a booty. Okay. So I did so much research and I came across this app that has solved every problem that I've ever had about working out with an app or a notebook and recording your weight, okay? The app is called Ladder. I'm going to link it to you in the show notes so that you can check it out because I'm pretty sure I can give you a month free, which is not what I got. I got 7 days free. And if you do it for a month, you will be addicted just like I was. I think in full transparency, it's like $178 for the whole year. So it's less than a dollar a day. Okay. It is so worth it because I have been so consistent on my own without a trainer because there's a personal trainer in the app. So the way that it works is that you take a quiz and you can also look up all these different teams, and all of the teams are led by a trainer. And what I like about how they set it up is they say, what do you like to do? Do you like to do high intensity? Do you like to do cardio? Do you like to do Pilates? Do you like to do weightlifting, bodybuilding, Olympic lifting? What is it? And you put in this information and then they say, how long do you want your workout to be? Which is huge for me because I don't want to be at the gym for 90 minutes every time I work out. I want to get in and out. And then even better, it says, what is your desired outcome? And they mean aesthetically. So if you're trying to grow an hourglass figure, or you want a big peachy butt, or you want big shoulders, athletic build, or you want to improve your performance, or there's one program that's all about becoming healthier for your family so you can play with your kids and be there for them. The coaches are so charismatic. They're so amazing. And they have their programs tailored to exactly what it is you want. By the way, this is not sponsored either. This is just an evangelical fan of Ladder. I'm so obsessed with it. And then what they give you is a workout program where it has 7 workouts programmed for the week, but you can just work out 3 times a week minimum to keep your streak. And that's the thing. The app is so perfectly gamified to keep you wanting to go and not skip the gym so that you don't break your streak and so you get badges. And I know that sounds so stupid. I have never, for like the Apple Health on my phone, no, I don't care about the badge. I don't care about anything. I care about the badges on this because they make it so fun. So when I started, it was just before they were doing this thing called Aura Hunt, and there were 35 badges that you could collect that were Aura badges. So it was like if you worked out before 7 a.m. in the morning, you got a early bird Aura. Or if you got you did a flex workout, you got a flex Aura. If you did a cardio workout, you got a cardio Aura. And they were all these little badges that I was collecting like a fucking Pokemon freak. And I was obsessed with it. I had so much fun. There was some mystery auras, and then there's chats where people are talking about, oh, I found the mystery aura. You have to do this to unlock it. Or if you worked out 3 times in a weekend, you got a weekend aura. You guys, I'm not kidding you. Like, let yourself be swept up in the gamification. Maybe that's the theme of this episode. We gamified San Francisco. I gamified my fitness. I've been so consistent. And on top of that, the actual workouts are so good because not only are they all programmed, but it records your weight and then it makes recommendations for you based on what you did last week and what you should do this week. So for example, last week I did, I don't know, like a 60 pound hip thrust. So this week it's like go up to 65, right? And maybe drop the reps down a little bit. And then my coach is in my ear. It connects with my Aura ring. It connects with Spotify. So you can play music while you listen. And then the coach gives you cues while you're working out. While you're working out, it's literally in your ear. And it's like, okay, if you're doing a reverse curtsy lunge. Make sure that you're bending at the waist forward a little bit so you're activating your glutes and not your hamstrings if you want your glutes to grow. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm standing straight up. I should probably bend over a little bit. Or it tells you whatever it is. It times out the workouts for you. It gives you the rep count, or it'll say we're doing a plank for 30 seconds or whatever it is. It gives you a warm up, a workout, and a cool down, and it is so worth it. Like I said, this is not sponsored, but what a fucking commercial. Somebody send this to Ladder, because I'm telling you guys, this is a game changer. It's keeping me consistent. It's keeping me honest. I worked out last night at the hotel. I worked out this morning at the hotel. I'm being consistent. And normally I'd be like, I'm on vacation, I'll just skip it, even though I'm not really on vacation. So I've been loving that so, so much. If you guys are on Ladder, let me know so we can friend each other and I'll give you cheers or whatever. Let me know what team you're on. I'm dying to know, but I've been having so much fun. So I've been doing a lot of Aloe purchasing. They just had their 30% off sale. You guys know I love that one. And I've been also building my wardrobe. So I've been building my wardrobe slowly. Unsuccessfully. I've been looking for some new denim as I showed up in San Francisco and I said, okay, I look like a millennial. All my jeans are really tight. I need to get some baggy jeans. So I started with AYR. I got a pair of jeans. I kind of hate them. They were really expensive too. I just ordered 4 pairs from Mother. I sent them all back. I didn't really like those. There's a nice frame store down in like the, Pack Heights area, I think that's where that was. So I'm looking for jeans. So if anybody has some good jeans recommendation, I'm all for it. But it does get pretty chilly down in my office. So I've been doing like a cardigan, a chunky necklace, and some jeans every day. I got some nice pants for around the house. And I've been spending a lot of time gardening in my little garden. Justin and I have been doing yard work. I've been reading my Martha Stewart book. Like I said, I made a quiche. I'm so proud of myself. I also did this really fun project, you guys. I'll have to record this actually on TikTok because it's so meaningful. My mom has given me her old bags, and she bought her first Louis Vuitton bag in 1975 in San Francisco, by the way, in Union Square. And it was a Louis Vuitton Speedy. I've had it forever in a big tub with all these other purses that I have. And I'm scrolling TikTok and I see they come out with this brand new Louis Vuitton Super Soft Speedy Boho that has, so pretty. It has really patina dark handles that are made of ostrich leather and like a luggage tag on it. Has this like beaded thing that I would take off, but I was looking at this bag and I was like, oh my God, I need this bag. It's $5,000 because of the leather handles. I'm like, that's ridiculous. I already have a Speedy. But the reason I like the Speedy, the new Speedy, the new soft Speedy Boho, was because it had this rolled leather like shoulder strap. And I'm like, oh, I love that so much. But my mom's Speedy is so old, it doesn't even have the D-rings on the end so I can put the shoulder strap on it. So you know what I did, guys? I got crafty. I ordered D-rings from Amazon. I ordered a belt loop puncher. I called my mom. I asked permission first. She said, go for it. I punched holes in my mom's 1975, 50-year-old Louis Vuitton Speedy. I put D-rings on it. I ordered the rolled leather handle off of Etsy that matches as close as I can match to how patinaed hers is. And I made myself a brand new bag. It's my new daily driver. This bag is 50 years old. There's literally a hole in the bottom. There is blue ink that has been spilled from a pen probably before I was born. But the fact that I'm carrying my mom's Speedy around in San Francisco when she was doing the same thing 50 years ago is such a trip. So I've been loving that moment. Okay, so enough about what I've been buying. What have I been reading? What have I been watching? Let's talk about books really quick. Let me tell you what I didn't read was Strangers by Bell Burden. Everybody was talking about it earlier this summer, and I just can't. I just can't because I think it's the type of book that somebody else's tragedy makes everybody else put these glasses on that make them look at their partner and put them into attack mode. I feel like it was going to put me into fight or flight of like her whole story is I woke up one day and my husband hated me and left me and then he stole all of my money. And you know what? that's just not the type of energy that I have in my life right now. And I'm also doing things differently to protect myself, because what we heard from Belle Bird and Strangers was that she didn't want to prenup. She didn't want to do things in the way that she was advised to. She actually ignored legal advice over and over and over again. And then she got screwed. So that's not the book for me. But let me tell you what book is for me. Couple that I've read so far. I just finished The Shampoo Effect by Jenny Jackson. She's the same author as the book Pineapple Street, which I reviewed many moons ago. I really enjoyed this book. I finished it in literally a day. It was just a really cute friends in, not Nantucket, but friends in, I don't know, East Coast somewhere. I kind of forget now. A writer, there's a group of friends, and then there's a new girlfriend, and she gets into the mix and she messes everything up and everybody hates her. And it's a crazy story. It was really enjoyable to read. It was slow. It was summery. It was exactly what I needed. And I really enjoyed it. I also read the book Pink Glass Houses, Another Rich People Behaving Badly. This one's by Asha Elias. I would actually give this one like a 2.5 out of 5. It is about a wealthy PTA mom in Miami, mom circle rather, and all the dynamics there. So if you have kids in school age and have all those mom dynamics, you might enjoy it. Let me know. I didn't really like it that much. It just didn't grab me and it kind of felt like a slog. I also read the book Trust, and I was like, why have I heard about this book by Hernan Diaz? I was like, everybody's talking about this book Trust, and it's about wealthy people and power. Sounds perfect for me. And I guess the reason that it was in the ether or in the zeitgeist was because this is the book that Dua Lipa and her husband were both reading allegedly on a train, and they saw each other reading the same book, and they were like, wow, you're reading the same book. I don't even know if that's true. But I decided to read it. And let me tell you, I got one third of the way through it. I think it's broken into three. It literally is at 35% in my Kindle right now. So depressing. Has anybody made it past the first section? Because I quit. I quit so hard. It was making me so sad after the first story. And then it switched characters. And I was like, I don't think I can sign up for that again. So if you've made it past the first section in the book Trust by Hernan Diaz, can you please send me a voice note on Instagram and let me know if it's worth my time to finish? Because it rocked me and really depressed me. But I'm not going to tell you anything about it because, I mean, it's set in like the 1900s. It's set in older times. And it is about a very wealthy person who's a bit obscure. And then he finds his perfect match in a woman who's also a bit obscure. And then they have a lovely relationship. And then it all falls apart. So that sucked. I'm also working through Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. This has been a really important book for me because I'm starting to make some really meaningful hires in my business that are scaring the shit out of me. When I think about the salaries that I'm paying, my coach, Jessica, I don't want to call her a coach. That's demeaning, honestly. My business strategist, Jessica Marks, she has Tailored Premier and the podcast Millions Were Made. You guys have heard me talk about her so much. She's been on the show. She's literally a genius. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe you haven't read that book. Like, read it, please, because it's going to explain to you how to get over that fear of hiring people, because we're not just putting money into a salary. It's an investment to buy back your time. So that's been so good. So what have I been watching? Okay. During Mercury in retrograde, when I was so into my feelings, I watched Five Star Weekend, which is on Peacock. It's starring Jennifer Gardner. It's based on an Elin Hildebrand book about a woman who is recently widowed and she's getting her five stars, her five friends back for the weekend. It was such a stupid, like, five stars, like, that didn't make any sense to me at all. It was really a reach of the title, but it was a nice story, and the characters and how they're all intertwined and all of the dynamics. I actually really found myself very invested in it and really wanting to watch it, but it was quite slow. It was a fine show. It wasn't anything I would rewatch, or I was going to say it wouldn't be anything I'd recommend to anybody. And here I am recommending it to you on Old Money Podcast. Okay, make it make sense. But like, I wouldn't go to somebody and be like, yeah, watch this show, because I think it's kind of an acquired taste. Like, you kind of have to be in a mood for it. And it was okay, but I really enjoyed it. It doesn't even give you big, like, I don't know, Nantucket vibes. And I know Nantucket is just such of the moment right now. But I just enjoyed watching Jennifer Garner. I think she's such a lovely person. The character is just her as a person, a lady who likes to bake and cook. And this lady in the movie, or the show rather, is an influencer. And then there's a big twist, which is really interesting, that I did not see coming. And I was really hooked. So that's fun. I've also been watching, you guys know what I'm going to say, McBee Dynasty, Real American Cowboys in Gallatin, Missouri. You guys, I cannot get enough of this show. This is what my reality TV dreams are made of. The chaos, the breakdown of Stephen McBee and Allie Eklund's relationship in the fallout of what happens at Stagecoach, and just them blasting all of their personal business on everything and seeing her clock him in the moment while they're filming, while they're still in their honeymoon phase, and her being like, "You're fucking weird," is just the most satisfying thing to watch. Not to mention there is fraud. The father goes to prison, literally. I heard he's getting out early in September of this year, which is so crazy. But this was all filmed in December of last year. They're such hypocrites. They're like, "Galena, don't be going out on trips every single weekend. The banks are looking at what you're doing." And then the guy goes on a trip, and then they go to Vegas. And then they're like, one of the brothers is like, "What about the optics?" And the other brother's like, "Fuck the optics." But he was just lecturing on the optics. You guys, it is madness. I love it. It is a whiplash I am happy to be a part of. I just couldn't be happier than a pig in shit watching this show, because it literally is that. It is just people being so unhinged for the pursuit of fame. And it's just something I cannot relate to, but my God, it's enjoyable television. So highly recommend McBee Dynasty, not because they're pillars of society, but because they are absolutely batshit crazy. I'm also enjoying NYC Next Gen, NYC Prep, NYC Next Gen, Next Gen NYC. I'm not sure. The one with Gia and Brooks Marks. Brooks Marks, by the way, is he okay? Like, he is the most avoidant, ineffective communicator. He is not somebody who should be a role model on television show. Him, his sister, and Meredith Marks all need to be awaken up with a little bit of shock therapy. By the way, when we were in Park City, I walked past the Evita Tequila Lounge. Not a soul in sight. It's an actual hole in the wall that goes underground, like downstairs, and it looked terrifying. And then Meredith Marks' store was empty, just stripped empty. I'm not sure if it was open during the day and I missed it, but we were there at like 5 o'clock and there was nothing in the display cases. So that was interesting tidbit. I've been enjoying the show. I like the dynamic between the actual New York City cool kids, like Georgia, who is, I admit it, very annoying, but she is effortlessly city herself. She's individual. She's cool. She doesn't really give a fuck. And also Ava, Charlie, Liam, they all have this kind of grit, this city grit about them that is very authentic to young people living in New York City, privileged or not. And then you have Ariana Zolciak. What's her name? Ariana from Kim Zolciak's daughter. I don't even remember their last name anymore. She's dating this guy named Hudson, who is just, you know, driving in from a private jet in a Maybach. He's wearing all this iced out jewelry. Did you guys know that his dad is a billionaire? He's the inventor of Zaxby's Kitchen. Chicken, not kitchen. Chicken, is that right? And he just is such a tryhard. It is so interesting to me to watch the dynamics of like who's in, who's out, all those types of things. So anyway, that's what's been on my television recently. But quite frankly, I've been watching a ton of TV. So I'm hoping to watch something housewivesy tonight in this hotel room when I get some room service. Probably will get fries and what did I say? Fries and a Caesar salad in salmon with dressing on the side, because that's my girl dinner. Anyway, what else has been going on the internet? So let's talk about a couple things that I've been interested in talking to you about, and then we'll wrap up the show. Just some hot topics, if you will. First of all, everybody's been talking about the whole Fia drama. If you haven't heard, where have you been? But Fia and the Emigreed disease thing are two things that are really interesting to me. So if you haven't heard about Fia and the drama there, Sophia Gates is the daughter of Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, who is a billionaire. His daughter, Phoebe, starts this Did I say Phoebe? Yeah, I think that's her name. Phoebe and Sophia is her co-founder. They start this shopping app that's kind of like Honey, where if you are searching for something online, you install this plugin and then it searches the rest of the internet for you and finds you a better price. They have this podcast, and I think it's on Alex Earle's network, where it's talking about how to survive corporate as a young person. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if either of those girls have ever had to really survive corporate, because they started their own project and then they raised, I think, $35 million in a celebrity funding round where everybody under the sun, Mindy Kaling, Alex Earle, all these people put in money and invested because they had such great numbers to show how much commission they were making. Because essentially their whole business proposition is that they're an affiliate marketing app, but their code was such that, without getting into the details, they were taking advantage of commissions that they were not owed. Meaning they were not only taking commissions from other creators in some instances, but also taking commissions from companies when they were not the ones driving the sale because of the way that their app was functioning on people's devices. And so it's been this huge fallout of, okay, well, Fee is a fraud. And what's really interesting is that there's so much lore here about Honey, which is the coupon app. When you install it on your computer, it searches for coupons for you so you can get a discount code on a site. And I don't know about you, but I've literally never had success with any of those coupon codes working. I put them in, they're like, meh, can't be used, which is fine, whatever. And so one of the people on their advisory board was a previous executive at Honey who had gone through something similar to this fraudulent case with Honey, where Honey was doing something very similar. So they had direct experience with this. And so what's so interesting to me is that who's responsible? The founders. And at the end of the day, they fraudulently took money in commissions or took money in the form of investments from their investors based on data that wasn't accurate. And this is really scary because as a founder, it is your responsibility. You have a fiduciary duty, meaning you have a duty to make sure that the numbers, the product, the accounting, the tech works and is above board before you take any money from anywhere. And what's interesting, juxtaposed with this, is this whole trend of Emma Greed disease. Everybody's talking about Emma Greed disease, which is Emma Greed comes out with this book called Put Yourself First, I think it is. And her whole ethos is, you know, work hard, make money. I don't spend a lot of time with my kids. You got to sacrifice if you want to make it to the top. And people are saying that's so unhealthy. But then the other counterpoint to that is, well, you know what? Emma Greed is running billion-dollar businesses, and she's showing up on yachts and private planes and coming into her office with her chic outfits that are styled by not her, but somebody else, you guys. She doesn't style her own outfits. And she is telling the truth for what it takes to be at her level. But you don't have to be at Emma Greed's level to be a founder or to be successful. You don't have to make the same sacrifices. You can choose differently. You don't have to be doing what she does, because she defines success in a different way than you or I might. But Emma Greed disease is all of these people that are being influenced by her to be a girl boss. We're back to the girl boss era again, and how glamorous it is and how her outfits are, and she walks with her Birkin and she da 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 da. And you know what? It does take an extraordinary amount of effort to create something extraordinary, and she has 1000% did that, and she's telling her reality. It does not have to be your reality. But I think what's happening is that a lot of people are shortcutting the reality of being a founder and the responsibility and the impact and the fact that you're responsible for people's money and salaries and careers and them buying homes and cars and whatever it is that they're doing. And this whole back and forth has just been so interesting to watch the dialogue. Now, my personal thought on this, it just makes me even more risk adverse with my business, if I'm being totally honest, because running a business is risky. So what did I do? I had my attorney. I actually was inspired to call my attorney and say, can we just do another contract review? Let me call my insurer. Let me just make sure everything's up to date and good to go. I think that's the responsible thing to do. I'm not being dramatic. I'm not doing anything crazy, but I'm like, oof, being a founder can be tough and scary. Do I really know what's going on in my business? I've been doing a huge financial audit of all of our systems and profitability trackers and all the things. That's my job as the CEO. So for me, it was a reminder to mind my P's and Q's. And then the Emma Greed disease, the thing that is so interesting about this, and I heard Jacqueline Johnson talk about this. She is the founder of Create Cultivate, I'm pretty sure. I think I got that right. I'm not quite sure, actually, now that I'm saying that out loud. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Saying that, you know, why do we see Emma Greed all the time and why are we so inundated by this? Because, you guys, it's what's showing up in our algorithm. We're getting influenced by our algorithms all day, every single day, and it becomes our new normal, even when it's not normal. It is not normal, you guys, to be unboxing a Birkin every single day. But do you know how many Birkin unboxings I scroll past on my TikTok on a daily basis? It is not normal to be going to Chanel to buy everything from the Matthew Blessy collection. Oh, damn, I really messed that up. Bad delivery. Matthew Blessy 2025 spring, summer, you know, whatever the fuck. People are going and spending mad amounts of money. That's not normal. But when we see it all the time, it becomes normal. When we see this talk about success and sacrifice and what it takes, it becomes normal. There's that whole familiarity bias. Once you see something, or the recency bias, you see it recently, it's what you remember. You see it often, it becomes familiar. It's what you accept. So if you need a new perspective, change up your environment. You can move to San Francisco with me, or you can just reset your algorithms, you know, see what happens. Speaking of algorithms, what else is happening right now? I was cracking up at this whole hot girl walk drama. I don't know if you guys saw, but there's a girl online who either owns or is registering for the copyright hot girl walk. According to her, she's the first person to say hot girl walk on the internet. And from the video that I watched of her, she said, nobody was talking about walking before I talked about it, which I don't know if that's true, but whatever. So she has been suing people who have been using hot girl walk in their content. And this is really interesting because I work in aesthetics. You guys know that some of our clients are in medical aesthetics, dermatology, cosmetic dermatology, et cetera, plastic surgery. And there is that facial that used to be called the vampire facial. Do you remember? Which was microneedling with PRP. Everybody still does this. It's huge. It's so good for your skin. But this one guy got the trademark to vampire facial, and he used to reach out and sue everybody that would use it online. I mean, he was searching day and night. I had so many clients that got contacted by him because they mentioned it. You might have heard of the vampire facial, but we call it microneedling with PRP. And it's like ambulance chasing, right? So this girl is protecting her copyright, which she has every right to do, if she owns it, I guess. And it's been so funny to see people react to this, being like, okay, like, I'm going to go on a girl walk. Or Tinks had an event in San Francisco and she's like, rich mom walk, no hot girls allowed, or something like that. It's just been interesting to see. But again, what do we do as a regulated, amazing, old money, rich girls? We call our trademark attorneys and we say, hey girl, are we doing trademark monitoring? And I wasn't. So I made sure to get registered for that again, just to make sure somebody's keeping an eye on my trademarks so that they don't accidentally expire and I don't lose them, because that's my IP, baby. So I've just been watching this, and people react and respond has been so interesting. I'm not really inspired by the Paige Lorenz, Paige Paul drama. I did love her wedding, though. I thought it was absolutely stunning. Her dress was sickening. Paige Lorenz was her maiden name. She is the founder of Dairy Boy. She recently married a tennis player and she had the chicest wedding. It was so beautiful, so ethereal and classic. It was giving, I don't know, it was giving Paige Paul, like, good for her, like setting the standard. I also loved her reception dress. Reminded me of my wedding dress, that halter neck, open back. I want to wear that thing again, but I literally would never, because I can't do a vow renewal, because if you've ever watched anything on Bravo, you know that's the kiss of death. So I loved her wedding, but I'm not interested in the whole Nantucket influencer drama, whatever. I almost said Taylor Spears. That was a Freudian slip. That's not what I meant to say. Taylor Swift, that's her name. Taylor Swift's wedding, where are the photos? Like, we're waiting for a documentary? Like, what the fuck? Like, no, like, not everybody is a crazy fan of Taylor Swift. I'm a casual observer. I like some of her music. I like her music better when it's covered by a pop punk band. Well, let me tell you guys, there's this pop punk band that I've been listening to on Spotify. They cover like Hilary Duff and Taylor Swift. They're called, I'll tell you one second, I'm looking. They're called Liked Songs. They're called Our Last Night. And I have I'm With You, The Fate of Ophelia, and Come Clean. And it's in pop punk version. And it is so good. Anyway, I don't understand what happened there at her wedding and why we're not seeing photos of it. Let us celebrate you. Like, you're the most public people in the entire world until you're not. Like, what's going on? So I think she's waiting to put it all in a documentary. And like, I just don't want to watch a documentary. I just want to see the photos. I just want to see the photos and celebrate you. Like, I was behind you guys. Like, when Travis Kelce is winning the Super Bowl and he's like singing Beastie Boys, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, I get it. I get it. But like, now you're being all weird and secretive and putting it behind a paywall. I'm not sure. By the way, this is not confirmed. This is just me speculating. That's been a weird thing. So I think her wedding was tacky. I think probably the guest list was so random. And if you know anything about me, I say you guys should have fucking eloped. If you had to invite everybody, if you care so much about your relationship and it's everything you've ever wanted, like, make it super intimate and romantic. And then we can talk. Okay, what else is on my list of news? Oh, I love this story. On the other side of marriage, there's divorce. And this headline for me just gave me the chills. It sent a shiver up my spine in the best way, because this is what we call justice. South Korean AI billionaire faces $1 billion divorce payout after, quote, marriage of the century crumbles amid affair with a younger woman. So there's this tech billionaire in Korea who publicly confessed to loving a woman other than his wife and fathering a child with her. What are you doing, sir? Like, if you don't want to be with your wife, get a divorce, because now she's taken him for a ride, because he's now going to have to pay out $1 billion to his ex-wife, which I love because of the timing. She is having the courts value his net worth based on perceived market value, not actual asset value, because he owns this company. And I guess his company like supplies something to Nvidia, their chips or something. And so his net worth has skyrocketed tenfold since the start of 2025, and she is getting her piece of it. So love that for her. She's also probably going to get some of the empire of his business, and I love that for her too. If you dig into this story and you see all the back and forth and the drama, it's so interesting. I don't know about you guys, but if you're into like Korean pop culture, my mom watches all of these Korean soap operas. She's obsessed with them. And it's so funny. She like has them on in the background for noise in the house. And it's not like you can listen in, because they're literally in Korean. So she has to like rewatch them, read the subtitles, but they kind of give me like telenovela vibes. And there's so much like richness in Korean pop culture. And so I was reading all about this in the Daily Mail. It's just so interesting. Again, what is an old money girl to do? An old money girl is to get a prenup before she gets married, right? Because an old money girl takes care of herself. And it just makes me think again, like, what do you think Lauren Sanchez is doing right now? Like, is she tanning in a tanning bed? Is she oiling Jeff Bezos's head? I have no idea, but I'll tell you what Mackenzie Scott is doing. She's given away more than $26 billion since their divorce. Did you know that? It's making her one of the most generous philanthropists in all of history. And she does it really interestingly. She just writes checks. She doesn't like set up a foundation with all these rules and things. She just writes checks to nonprofits who, quote unquote, know how to use the money. I don't know if I trust that, because if you know anything about what's happening in California, there's this huge like scandal with all the NGOs and the homeless nonprofits funding themselves and not solving homelessness, and whatever happened with the fire aid money in Palisades and Altadena. So many questions here. But what's interesting is that the more money she gives away, the more her wealth keeps growing, because Amazon stock keeps growing, and that's what she has. You guys, I just can't say it enough, but if you are not invested in the stock market, you have not missed the boat. I'm not saying it's going to go up and to the right forever, but you guys, America's on a tear. And if I haven't said it again clearly, this is not financial advice, but I love the S&P 500, because you guys, it's the top 500 companies in the United States. And if you start to suck, they don't put you on a performance improvement plan. They kick you out of the S&P 500 and replace your ass with the next most best company, the 501st. It's a self-correcting index that continues to grow and grow and grow. And remember what I said earlier? I'm sitting at the epicenter of the gold rush. So if I could have invested in the 1800s and all of the people that were making blue jeans and all the people that were making shovels and picks and supplies and gold pans and housing, and then I held on to that for a couple of generations, I'd be sitting in a house in Pacific Heights or Presidio Terrace right now with my rich ass old money as well. Old money takes time to compound, generations usually. That's why they call it old, because it's literally been earned a long time ago, but it wasn't just earned, it was invested. And there is so much happening right now, so much so that even when Mackenzie Bezos becomes the most generous philanthropist of all time, she keeps getting richer. Like, I couldn't think of anything better. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm just checking on you here. Are you investing? Are you doing dollar cost averaging? And speaking of what I talked about earlier, I'm always going to trickle in the little, you know, check-ins on money. But if you're interested in any money education, and I want to shout out one of the girls that wrote in recently, I have your name here, Noah. You wrote me the sweetest email and you were asking a little bit about saving and all the things. Anything that's really money education focused, I'm going to put that into old money mindset or old money method. That's where all of that's going to live. All of the money, the tactical stuff, how to invest, it's all there. Old money mindset or old money method. They're always linked around everything that I do, but that's where you can get the resources on that, because you guys, the principles don't change. There's nothing new to add. There's nothing new to say. I can't keep talking about it on the podcast because I'd be talking about the same stuff all the time. My financial system is not complicated. It's actually very simple. So I've talked about it a lot. There's tons of free episodes and resources all in the canon of old money, but also it's all in there in old money method. If you need any help with nervous system regulation and emotional regulation and overcoming emotional spending or impulsive spending, that's in mindset for you. But honestly, I think we're just going to keep it light over here moving forward. Okay. Anyway, what else do I have on here? Oh, this is so good. I was obsessed with this subreddit. It is a little bit of women on women crime. And I need to know your take on this because I'm obsessed. It was posted on the subreddit called Bridezillas about a month ago in July. And I'm cracking up at this ask for advice. So let me read this to you and then you tell me what you think. Okay. My best friend got engaged in April. I was genuinely happy for her. We've known each other since middle school and have always said we would be in each other's weddings. Last week, she asked me to be her maid of honor. Then she sent me a spreadsheet. Dress, alterations, shoes, hair, makeup, bridal shower contribution, bachelorette, Airbnb, flights, decorations, matching pajamas, dinner reservations, group activity, emergency wedding fund, and a few things I still do not fully understand. My estimated total is $4,700. I thought maybe I was reading it wrong. I called her and said I was honored, but that number is not realistic for me. I have some money saved up, but I also have rent, student loans, and my car needs repairs. I can do the dress. I can help plan and show up. I cannot spend almost $5,000 in being a bridesmaid. She got quiet and she said she really needed people around her who were all in. I asked what that meant. She said this is once in her life and she did not want to spend the next year managing other people's limitations. This sentence has been sitting in my chest since. I told her I was not trying to make the wedding about money. She said money is a part of showing up, whether people want to admit it or not. I ended the call politely, but I have not answered the group chat since. The other bridesmaids are acting like this is normal. One of them sent Venmo requests for the Airbnb deposit. And I feel embarrassed, honestly. Like I failed some adulthood test where everyone else can absorb casually absorb thousands of dollars for someone else's wedding. Another part of me, though, is angry. I have loved her for 17 years. I have showed up for breakups, funerals, panic attacks, bad apartments, worse boyfriends, and everything in between. I did not know my friendship had a minimum spend. Would you step down or try to make it work? You guys, I was thinking about this and I made myself think about this before I read the comments because this sent me. I mean, number one, the audacity, the actual audacity. And then on the other hand, I was like, actually, is that a nice thing to do? Because so many times I hear people in too deep because they didn't realize what the expectations were up front. And then they're too far in and then they're going into debt. They're overspending. They're stressed. It strains the relationship. And at least this girl was upfront about what her expectations were. But for me, my take, and you can pause this if you want to come up with your take first. But I'm going to tell you my take. My take is this girl is so evolved, so thoughtful, so wonderful as a friend. The way that her language is, like, that sentence has been sitting in my chest since. I feel embarrassed. Another part of me is angry. She is in touch with her emotions. She's mature. She's being very vulnerable here. You can tell that she's a thoughtful, wonderful, loving person. And after thinking about it, no, I'm back to the audacity, because you cannot put on people what they need to spend on you, but you can communicate and ask, what are you available for? Honestly, I agree with the majority of the sentiment in the comments, which is you have to step down. Like, she has to recuse herself of the duties of being a maid of honor, because you can bet that spreadsheet's going to grow. It is a crazy ask for somebody to spend $5,000 on somebody else just because you're getting married, because quite frankly, a lot of people get married, and a lot of people get married more than once. It's not a once in a lifetime thing. And putting somebody in that type of financial position is insane. And I so appreciate the writers, or the question writer, the author of this letter, asking or identifying, I feel like this is part of some test that I failed as an adult. That is so real, because it does feel like that. It feels like we're just supposed to cough up money for everything all of the time. And I would not be able to do that for a friend. Like last year, even I would, that my budget was too tight and dedicated. I was getting married. What about your own dang wedding? Put that $5,000 towards your future wedding and start saving for it so that you can treat people. My biggest philosophy is, if you're going to host people, you're going to ask them to come out to dinner for you, with you, you pay. If it's your birthday dinner, you host the catering, you host the alcohol. When it's your wedding, you pay for people to come. And it's not transactional. It's not like I expect a gift. It's about, I'm celebrating something and I want the people that I love to be here to celebrate it with me. And you should never be putting somebody out in a financial position like this, because it's crazy. And I just think the bridezilla is missing out on one of the most thoughtful, loving, sensitive, attuned, emotionally intelligent and mature friends, and she's missing the boat. She has lost the plot. And while I do think it is better that this, it's one of those things where, and I hate when people say this, better you found out sooner rather than later. It is better she found out sooner rather than later before she spent money on this. And it's showing me the limitations of the bride, of where she's coming from and what her expectations are. The expectation is not on preserving the relationship. The expectation is on the spending the money, and the priority is not protecting the friendship or the friend. It's absolutely insane behavior. So this is such an interesting article. I can link to it if you guys want to look at it again. It was on Reddit and it just totally threw me for a loop. So that was a little woman on woman crime. Let's talk about women raising up other women. I love this article. It's from Bloomberg. And it's, I mean, this is like that happy news. Remember Tank's Good News on Instagram? I barely even go on Instagram anymore, but this goes there. And it's about what's going on in India between women. According to this article in Bloomberg, there is a financial revolution happening in India, and women are investing more than they ever have before. And stock market participation by women in India is at an all-time high because of what started in a few WhatsApp chat groups. There have been some private chats and Google Meet classes where women are coming together to talk about investing. They're talking about stock watch lists, company earnings, valuation metrics, technical analysis, risk management, and it's all grassroots. One in four Indian stock market investors is now a woman. Can you fucking believe that? 25% of the people that are participating in the stock market in India are now women, and they're not going to any formal education. They're supporting and teaching each other. Assets held by women in mutual funds have more than tripled over 5 years, growing from 5.4 trillion rupees to 18 trillion rupees by the end of 2025. And I'm obsessed with this because it's not just about investing. It's about changing household dynamics and the traditional Indian culture and how that's evolved. And it really talked a lot about how investing is becoming more of an everyday conversation where previously it was something reserved only for finance professionals and especially for men. This is exactly what I wanted to happen with Old Money. And I know that this podcast has been so impactful for so many of you. So to close us out, I wanted to do a couple of shout outs, but I first wanted to just shout out everybody in the Old Money community for being here and being a part of this and adopting that rich girl mindset of, for example, when I hear somebody with a bad divorce, I don't spiral. I don't put myself in situations that are going to make me hate my husband. I just protect myself. Do you know what I'm saying? Sorry, Bell Burden, I'm not reading your book. But it's this mindset. It's this way of thinking and being and not being reactive, but being strategic and being really intentional about every piece of our lives, because our lives can be so rich when we invest in maintaining them and taking care of ourselves and creating something that we're active participants in, as opposed to having life happen to you. So thank you. If you've made it this long in this podcast, I tried to make it extra long to make up for the last couple of months. We covered everything. If you've made it this long, here's what I'd like to say. Number one, let me know what about this podcast you liked or didn't like. Did you like some of the news articles, the behind the scenes, the cultural insights, the reading of the advice for the Bridezilla? Tell me what you like the most and tell me what you want to see next. Couple shout outs before we go. I want to say shout out to my girl who's an OG rich girl, Shauna Jerzak, who is a beautiful Canadian dance teacher, business owner. She owns a dance studio and she wrote her first book called Starting in First. And it is such an incredible accomplishment for her. And I'm just so happy and proud of her. It is absolutely incredible to see all of you guys be a part of this community and go out and start your businesses and write your books and follow your dreams. So if you are a dancer, if you're interested in dance, in the dance world and in personal development, you need to check out Shauna's book. I'll link it for you guys in the show notes. I also want to shout out Noah. I mentioned her earlier. She had written into Old Money asking about mindset around saving and all the things. I'm going to add some additional resources into Old Money Method. So more on that to come. But Noah, I wanted to say thank you for writing in. I also wanted to shout out my girl, another OG rich girl, Maggie Kate. We've been chatting books all summer and I've been loving trading with you guys about what you're reading, what's hitting, what's not hitting, what's a DNF, all the things. So Maggie, shout out to you. And then lastly, I wanted to shout out my girl, Allie O'Brien. You guys know Allie O'Brien. I was on her podcast, Clean Truths. She is absolutely crushing it. She has a nonprofit called Chemo Club. And if you ever felt like you're doing a lot in your life compared to Allie O'Brien, I guarantee you, you're not. She is out there crushing it. She is pursuing legislation for mental health support for families of cancer patients in Washington, D.C. She's literally on Capitol Hill, you guys. She is interviewing and researching and learning everything about how to live an actual healthy life. And then she's also celebrating cancer survivors, cancer warriors. She just had a show at Miami Swim Week where she had some of her Chemo Club girlies walking in the runway in a collaboration with Post Swim. She's going to New York Swim Week and she has her merchandise on Revolve, you guys. I mean, she is absolutely crushing it. And again, we got connected through Old Money. All of these people have been connected through Old Money. And my last shout out is my girl, Marina Schifferman. You guys heard her on the podcast. We talked about real estate in San Francisco. Again, another connection through Old Money. And she's who I'm going to learn how to play Mahjong with, you guys. So if you want to learn how to play Mahjong with me and Marina in San Francisco, give us a call because we are here for it. And I'm just telling you, this community is so rich and I am richer for it. I don't know when I'll be back again, but I'll be back again soon. I love you guys so much. Keep in touch with me. Tell me what's going on. I'm on my own Instagram more than the Old Money one. So it's Amber in California. If you want to say hello, I answer every DM. I love you so, so much. I am sending you all the wishes for health and wealth and everything beautiful in your life. I love you and I'll talk to you soon. Look at you investing in your rich life one episode at a time. You're not just listening, you're leveling up. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, or prayers, slide into my inbox at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or in my DMs on Instagram at oldmoneypodcast. If this episode made you laugh, think, or write down a single note, please do me a solid and rate, review, and subscribe. It takes less time than your morning scroll and it helps this show reach more future millionaires. And speaking of growing the network, please share this with your ambitious bestie, your business buddy, or your secretly rich aunt. Please share the gospel of Old Money, and I will be more grateful than a trust fund kid on distribution day.
Thank you for being here. I'm rooting for your bank account, and I will catch you on the next episode of Old Money. Remember, I am not your lawyer, I am not your tax professional, and I am not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners and their personal and professional development, and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice.